Appreciate the lessons from Harry and from Mark so far. So we're going to continue speaking about Noah. And before we jump into this portion, which is God saves Noah, when you think about the ark and you think about that whole trip, and it reminds me or causes me to think about times when you're alone. And so, can you think about times when you really felt alone, or when people feel alone? It doesn't have to be you personally. But what are times when we often feel alone? What's going on, or what could be going on in our lives, or what are those types of situations? Okay, a death or a tragedy. Did someone else say something? Okay. So somebody dies, you know, that you really care about or that you've had a really close relationship with, and they're gone, and it can cause you to feel alone. Okay. Isn't that interesting how that works? All right, sometimes. So sometimes you can be surrounded by people and we feel alone. All right, so that's whether it be moving, just anything new. You could start a new job and people be around, you feel, right? We certainly know when we move towns with kids and we have kids, we're often concerned about, are they going to build relationships? Because they can go to school and still feel very alone, because they don't have anyone, even though they're surrounded by people. What are other times when you might feel alone or people feel alone? Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, isn't that a great insight, right? As far as we have, you know, we have people, you know, oftentimes in our lives, we're busy. Sometimes people get busy. When you get bored or you feel empty or you're just restless, we get busy and we don't stop and say, why am I feeling restless, or why am I feeling empty, or why am I, we don't address the issue, and people fill it, we fill it with, we can, with other stuff other than God, right? And oftentimes then when you fill yourself with God, there's a peace that comes, and a peace that you can't explain to other people, right? When you know you're with God, you're with God, right? I mean, you're walking with God. And that creates a whole different perspective, because it's a reliance on God, who you know and believe is bigger than you and loves you, versus having to rely on me. All right. Other times could be our own sickness and you feel alone, right? We get sick, or we get in a situation where we just can't be. You could be with God, but you might be ill. You might not be able to do the things you normally do. You might not be able to go see the people that you normally see. The sickness could be temporary, or it could be a long time. But, you know, we just went through a pretty bad flu season. And some of us were in bed for a week. People who are used to moving, we don't like being in bed for a week. And so we want to be out and moving around. I just want to take a moment as we introduce this and look at 1 Kings. If someone can turn to 1 Kings chapter 19. What's going on, 1 Kings 18, 1 Kings 19? What's going on here? What happened in the latter part of 1 Kings 18? Yeah, so Elijah is you know, basically saying that you know they need to follow the Lord, and you know he goes through, and this is the showdown at Mount Carmel, and Elijah does, you know, he says, well, hey, I've got this plan. You take all your prophets, and we're going to build this altar, and you call on your gods, and if your God lights the altar, then we worship your God, and he's the true God, and we'll do the same with the Lord, right? And was Elijah, what were kind of the numbers? Was this kind of, did he have the same kind of equal numbers of people supporting him that, what was kind of the,
400 to 1.
Yeah, it was around 400 to 1 or so, right? I mean, they had like 400 prophets. So it's not what our study's about this morning, but if you go read that, it's a fantastic account to read. And God, even though Elijah was by himself, was he by himself? Did he think he was by himself? Did he act like he was by himself? I mean, this guy had some, you know, he had confidence, and that was confidence coming from God. I mean, he knew God was going to deliver. He knew God was with him. When you think about David and Goliath, I mean, where were all of the supporters for David? They're back, you know, hey, hope it works out for you, right? Good luck, okay? I mean, this guy's been out there calling, and he gets out there now. I mean, so did David have a whole army around him? Did he have incredible training? Did he have all the latest equipment? I mean, when Goliath saw him, what did Goliath say? He's like, really? You send this ruddy boy out to me? And he's not even a man. And he goes, you know, I'm going to feed you to the dogs today. Right? This is the best you have. But how did David see it? Right? Did David not feel it? David said, you know, this day, the Lord's going to give me the victory. What's amazing about Elijah is that in chapter 19, in verse 1, you know, Ahab told Jezebel about how Elijah had all of her prophets executed. And how did she take that? Did she just sit down and weep and say, oh, I have to start over? She was furious. And she vowed to have him killed, to have Elijah killed. Right? And so, verse 3, chapter 19, when he saw that, he arose and what? Ran for his life. Now, this is a guy who just. If this doesn't tell us as human beings, you know, he who thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall, right? You've got to remember your power is in the Lord. The power is not in you. And as soon, it's like Peter stepping out onto the water. Elijah was fine. Peter was fine when they really knew, I'm with God, I'm with Jesus. But the second you forget that and you think, I have to do this on my own power, you run for your life, right? I don't have enough. I can't. You just defeated all of these prophets and everyone out here, and you can't stand up to Jezebel? Like, really, God? God's not strong enough to take care of her? Do you just see? He just sent fire down, burnt everything, licked up the water, burnt the stones. I mean, obliterated everything to where people fell on their faces from God's power. And at the end, in verse 10, he ran into the cave, and he said, I've been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. I want you to think about Noah in this ark. Noah's building this ark. We studied that. He builds the ark. He's preaching. He gets into the ark, and the Lord shuts him in, him and his family. I mean, does Noah know how everything's going to play out? I mean, what does he really know? He knows that God is not happy with the people, and he knows that, and he's been preaching, right? Because he's been preaching for him to repent. But he gets into this thing, and I want you to think, you know, does he have like a lot of boating experience? I mean, is he a captain? I mean, he's built this thing. He's got some pretty good skills here. I mean, he's built this boat with God's help, obviously. And God shuts him in. But, you know, has he ever, how many of you have been in a boat in a real storm? I mean, I have. I mean, Sandy and I've been where we've tied ourselves together with rope in the boat to make sure, right, that we were going to, at least we'd be together, okay? It gets scary. Water is scary. I can't imagine, as Mark was talking about, with the water coming up and the pouring rain that has to happen. And you know, there isn't a steering wheel on this thing. I mean, there's no steering wheel. There's not a rudder. He's not driving it. There isn't a sail. It's a tub. Right? It's a big wooden tub floating out there with all these animals. Now, depending on which cubit and all this, man, you know, this thing's 50 feet tall. It's 500 feet long. It's 80 feet wide. And while that sounds big, you know, it's not big when you get out in the ocean. Okay, it gets scary. I would be scared knowing that I'm not a boater and we're doing all of this and I built it. Think about that. Do you think Noah wondered? I sure hope this thing holds together. Yeah, I mean, it hadn't really rained. Okay, and so here we are. I mean, it's, you know, mist. I mean, so we're going from almost no experience to he's in this with his family. And think about the emotional side of it. I just don't think we can appreciate, you know, the emotional side of being in this ark and just thinking, what does this mean? And just feeling sad, he thinks about all the times he preached to people and all the conversations he had with people that he cared about and all the people who were gone. And when he thinks about people drowning or people, you know, and did he see anything? Did he see, you know, I don't know. Did he see people floating? Did he see, you know, I don't know, you know, and animals and just death? And could I have done more? This is a time where over time, you know, month three, you know, or so, I mean, you start to wonder, when is this going to end, right? When are we going to get to dry land? What's the future hold? So let's look at Genesis chapter 8, starting in verse 1. Get over there. So in verse 1 of Genesis 8, it says, then God what? He remembered Noah. And not just Noah, but in every living thing, in all the animals that were with him in the ark, God remembered Noah. What do you think that means? Or what does that mean to you? Do you think, did God forget that? Did he forget that Noah was out there? Okay. So God, this is God's attention, you know, focused on Noah. Right? It's I don't believe that God didn't know that Noah was out. He said, "Oh, that's right. Maybe I should. Yeah, I forgot about it. I left that guy out there, right in the boat." I don't think that's the case at all. And you know, what I want us to think about here is that in all of those times when you feel alone that we've talked about, God has not forgotten you. God remembers you. He knows you. And we'll talk about that here shortly. I didn't even look to see what time I'm supposed to end, just so I can... 11:20. Okay, thanks. So I can manage my time here. So... He remembered Noah, and we're going to come back to that, but you are not forgotten. You are not forgotten. And God made what in verse 1 after that? A wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. Okay. And the fountains of the deep and the windows of the heaven were what? They were stopped. And rain from heaven was restrained. So God remembers that he's thinking, okay, it's time. It's been enough time. And so he starts the process now of basically having the waters recede. And if you look in verse 3, and the waters receded continually from the earth, at the end of 150 days, the water decreased. Okay. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on mountains of Ararat. Now, it's been, we've all probably seen the shows where everyone's been looking for the ark. Right? I mean, it's, you know, they've looked and they think they see it here and they think they see it there, and they, you know, it could be out there somewhere. Right? I mean, it might be somewhere that we can't see or we don't know. But it rested on the mountains of Ararat, and the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. So at some point, you could start to see the tops of the mountains. Now, if this thing was 40, 50 feet tall, some of this ark is underwater, right? There could be 15, 20 feet of it underwater if it's 30 feet tall with all those animals and stuff in it. And so it could rest on something and even still there be nothing visible. It's like running aground. If you've ever been in a boat running aground, you can run aground without seeing the ground, depending on how clear or dirty the water is, because the boat sits, it has a draft, right? This could have a 20-foot draft on it. You have no idea how much of it's under the water. But anyway, in verse 6, it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made, then sent what out? We talked about this, Harry mentioned. Sends out a raven. Okay, sends out a raven in verse 6. Seven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself, a dove. Why? To see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. Now, I don't know. I don't understand all this. And if I'd grown up where, like they did, I mean, I'm on watching TV and the internet and doing other stuff, but we didn't have all that, I'd probably know more about doves, right? But I'd think if I had a dove and I let it go, I'm thinking I'm never seeing this thing again, right? It doesn't matter what is out there, water or no water. But for somehow, he figured this thing was going to come back to him, or there was some kind of a plan. I mean, to see if there, if water had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove didn't find a resting place, so he must have known maybe like a pigeon or something, right? Like a homing pigeon. It came back. Okay, so the dove came back, returned, verse 9. And it said, for the sole of her foot, right? She couldn't find no resting place for the sole of her foot. So that must be attributable to doves. So she returned to the ark, and he put out his hand, he took her, he drew her into the ark. And then he waited for another 7 days. And again he sent the dove out from the ark. The dove came to him in the evening, and behold, what? What did it have? An olive leaf was in her mouth. Now, you know, I don't know how tall the olive trees grow. I don't know how tall they grow. I don't know, you know, at what level, right? At some point, you get above the timber line. I think it's around 11,000 feet. Nothing grows. All right, so, you know, there's more significance to this, and I understand that, you know, where does an olive tree grow and where is it at? But waters had receded enough to where this thing, because how long at least has this olive tree been underwater? Yeah, I mean, but you know, a long time, about a year or so, right? I mean, so, you know, of course, all this is a miracle at some level. So, I mean, God could have done whatever he wanted to do to help things, you know, regenerate and the speed that they regenerate. But it's amazing how trees and stuff live, right? I mean, I've cut some down, basically ground the stump up, and I still got things springing up from their roots in different places. So they're not as easy to kill as you might think. Anyway, so the dove comes back. It has an olive leaf. And he waited another 7 days, verse 12, and he sent out the dove, and what? It didn't come back. It said, hey, my life's better than in this ark. I've been in here long enough. Okay? So even the dove got out. And then in verse 13, the second half, it says, Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. I mean, at this point, he is sitting, you know, on the ground. And you know how wet the ground can get when it rains, right? So you go out, especially like around here, you start walking in that red clay when it's wet. I mean, all of a sudden your shoes weigh about 25 pounds a piece. I mean, it's just wet. You can't walk in this stuff. But now it's dry. And in 14, you know, the second month, the 27th day of the month, the earth was dried. And God spoke to Noah, saying, what? What did he tell him? Go out of the ark. Who? Who was to go out of the ark? Everyone. You, your wife, your sons' wives with you. And bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and cattle and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on the earth. And what? Be fruitful and multiply on the earth. And so did Noah do that? That's what he did, right? So he went out, sons, wives with him, every animal, every creeping thing. Can you imagine what a sight that must have been? I mean, we often think about how did he get all those in the ark? But I think about what an amazing thing it must have been watching them come out of the ark. So, I mean, God shut them in. I'm sure God had to open that door, right? And now these animals start coming in. Can you just imagine? We've all seen videos and TV things where something was hurt or injured, and then they release it back into the wild, right? And they release it. And they just go. Right, I mean, they're excited to get away and not in captivity. My guess is that all of their wild instincts and all of that, this is all part of the miracle, you know, that God did. Just like Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, God clearly took away some of their natural instinct, those lions, or Daniel wouldn't have made it. Right? I mean, he closed their mouths. We know that. But the point is, God's in control of this situation. But the animals go, and they are to be fruitful and to multiply. I haven't thought about that. Yeah, I mean, no question. I mean, just through the whole process, right? You're not going to keep all these things alive. And, you know, I mean, did they eat their normal amount? And I mean, you just think about the waste. I mean, how do 8 people even keep up with the waste of all of these animals, right? I mean, so there's... We don't have really the whole picture, right, as to how God made this happen. It's a nice thought there of all the... But, you know, it's something you got to deal with. That's the first thing I'm thinking about is who's going to clean this ark? What's that? Yes. Yeah. So look at 1 Peter 3. Here. So in 1 Peter, someone read 1 Peter 3, 18 through 22. Keep going. Yep, you're right.
Who has gone into heaven and is on the right hand of God, angels and authorities and powers being made subject unto him.
Good. Thank you. So here we're told, right, that Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust. So he was just for the unjust. Why? Why did Jesus do that? It tells us there in verse 18. That he might bring us to God. You know, God wants a relationship with us. And it talks about, you know, where in verse 20, those who were formerly disobedient, when God's long suffering, you know, waited in the days of Noah while he was preparing the ark. And they were saved through water. And as Ralph was talking about earlier, there's an antitype now which saves us, which is what? Baptism. How we're saved through water. That whole process that Noah went through, whether he understood fully what was going on, he's building an ark, is this really going to work? How big does this thing really need to be this big? It doesn't make sense. The first lesson of Harry was that Noah was what? He was obedient. Right? He's obedient. We don't always understand, but we need to follow the plan. Right? We need to follow the plan. Baptism also saves us. God isn't going to leave us out in the ark. God hasn't forgotten you out in the world. He is calling us in, right? He's calling us to the table. He's calling us for the meal. And he doesn't just go and call all those who are fancy and all those who are, he calls all of us, right? I mean, Jesus said, you know, go call the lame, you know, invite them all. God is not a respecter of persons. God doesn't care what our bank account looks like. He doesn't care what our social status is. He doesn't care, you know, if we have a bald spot or we don't have a bald spot. I mean, he doesn't care about any of that stuff. We're all his creation, and he's calling all, and he hasn't forgotten you, just as he didn't forget Noah. Now, we may not understand the process and say, I mean, could God have gotten to the same place another way? I mean, did he have to do this whole build a boat thing and an ark and have this poor guy build this thing and have this dramatic flood and it come up slow and watch people try to swim for a while and hang on to things and die? And I mean, did it have to be done that way? Could he have not have done it another way? He could have just, I mean, did he not, when the plague was going around with Moses and them and the people were just dying around and Moses ran out into the middle, right, to stop it? I mean, God just could have, they just could have dropped dead. But we don't have to question, it's not ours to question the process. It's not ours to question the process. And when we think about baptism, right, and you think about Naaman, do I really need to dip seven times? Like seven times? I mean, what's easier, you know, as the servant comes over, you know, master, he's just telling you to dip seven times. I mean, if you can get your leprosy cured by dipping seven times, I mean, what's easier than that? I mean, seriously, like, what's easier, hardly, than dipping in water seven times to have leprosy cured? Like, look what we do to get a cold cured, or look what we do. It's a whole lot harder than dipping in water seven times. Is it really that difficult to be baptized? One time? Is it really the water? It's the submission. It's the faith. It's the obedience. All right. God saves. He puts a plan. You have to execute the plan. He gives us the plan. He walks with us. He shuts the door. He takes care of the animals. All right? He takes care of your family. I mean, do you think how many of us in a year have been really sick? Something really happens. I mean, I believe God took care of his family. I mean, where are they going to go? Are they going to the doctor? They don't have a doctor. There's eight of them. I mean, all of the skill and all of the knowledge that's in the world is on that ark. There isn't someone to take care of their health problems if one of them hurts themselves. There isn't someone to... God provides. And God provided for Noah, right? If you look in Psalm, turn over to Psalm 9, verse 10. What time is it? I think we're about, I have 1 minute. We'll end on this one. Jackie's going to buzz me here. What does Psalm 9, verse 10 say? There you go. And those who know your name will put their trust in you. For you, Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. God delivers. He saves. He loves us. We know that. We've seen that in our lives. We know it from what the Bible teaches. And he certainly loved and took care of Noah because Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So, thank you.